Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. Andy and Sam here, as always.
What's up, everybody?
With a special guest, Mr. A.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me
over
here.
How are you doing, dude?
Yeah. I'm doing great, dude.
Good, good, good. And you're here to talk about one of your movie picks. This episode is going to be about the 1980 thriller mystery, I guess.
Yeah.
With Al Pacino. It's called Cruising.
Cruising.
Directed by William Friedkin.
Yeah.
Who else is in the cast, Sam?
Yeah, you have Al Pacino, Paul Sorvino, and Karen Allen are probably
the three main
characters that you see throughout. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as synopsis goes,
like for the story?
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. It's kind of like a police mystery. There is a killer out, and Al Pacino goes undercover to find who the killer is.
Right.
And maybe save some people along the way.
Yeah, and Mr. A, do you want to talk about what makes this one unique?
What makes it so special?
Yeah.
Well, for me, guys, I mean, this is one of my, perhaps, you know, one of my most favorite films from this particular director. You know, William Friedkin has been around for almost, you know, 50 years
right.
in the business.
And, yeah.
You know, he's a great director who has the unique ability to create an environment and to explore themes and to mm-hmm. explore parts of the American culture, which a lot of people don't want to look to.
Right.
I think that's right. If you guys aren't familiar with William Friedkin, he did The Exorcist, the 1973 original, The French Connection, and more recently he did Matthew McConaughey's NC-17 movie Killer Joe.
Which has gotten great acclaim.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's for those reasons that I think this film is unique, and you look at the aesthetic of it, I mean, every frame that you see, it's filled with this type of grime and
mm-hmm.
the sleaze
yeah.
and this nasty underbelly of New
yeah,
York
yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
prior
yeah,
to
for
it
sure.
being Disneyfied, and I think it stands as a unique sociological document, not only of New York, what it used to be in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s,
mm-hmm.
but also examines, you know, an area of American life, which at the time of this movie was released, you know, a lot of people didn't have a lot of understanding about.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, definitely. You
know. Yeah, it's a subculture within a subculture because it's a very specific type of like homosexual culture they're looking at.
Yeah,
in this movie.
It's not like your regular dudes. Although there's one regular.
Yeah, I'd say
the friendly neighbor.
But I think it's the history of this movie is very interesting too, because if you look the reviews coming out of the movie, Mr. A, weren't so bueno right when it was released.
They're a little harsh right when it released, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean this movie was panned and vilified when it first came out,
mm-hmm.
and you know when they were shooting this in New York. If you noticed in parts of the movie, I mean, there were a lot of overdubs,
mm-hmm.
and you know the production was pretty much marred. You had a lot of gay rights advocacy groups who were going out and trying to screw up the production.
Yeah,
and there was concern that you know by portraying or having these portrayals of gay men on film
mm-hmm.
to this extent, I mean
right.
that would be not particularly representative of what
yeah.
gay life was.
Definitely,
right.
definitely. Because,
right.
yeah, it is a very particular subculture within the gay and lesbian community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the production was, you know, it had its problems. And then, of course, when it opened, I mean, a lot of people went to go see the movie. And then, you know, some people thought that it was just extremely homophobic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
With some of the shots that you see in the film where Al
yeah.
Pacino is doing surveillance in the various
yeah.
bars.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, as you can imagine, you know, for any regular moviegoer watching a movie of this sort,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing that this was actually licensed and, you know,
yeah.
by Hollywood.
For sure.
And had Hollywood
yeah.
backing. You know, you can imagine, well, I mean, watching something like that,
mm-hmm.
that would have a really, really reactive
response
for
response.
Sure.
The community.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
sure. Yeah.
I would think when I was watching it, like halfway, there are scenes, there are some scenes in the movie where I just like, wow, like how was he allowed to have those scenes in there considering the time period?
Right.
And
yeah.
I was thinking like, you know, talk about a movie that probably would have like an extended director's cut
yeah.
or something like that, because I'm sure he had so many other scenes,
yeah.
much more material that he could have probably used, but probably, you know, you have to cut it down to that, which is still very, very, you know, intense.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. You know, one of the things about Friedkin's films are is that, you know, he likes to go and capture the real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at the French Connection, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, that famous chase underneath the L, yes. that was all done real. Those locations were all mm-hmm. shot.
Yeah.
Those were all real. None of that mm-hmm. Was done on a set.
Right.
And you look at the stuff that was done in Cruising, you know, from what I remember reading about the film,
mm-hmm.
Friedkin had known a lot of guys who were involved in the New York Mafia. They were good friends of his. Wow. And he's a, you know, he tells these great stories about how these various guys, you know, would come over and spend time with him and uh-huh. his family in his yeah. apartment in New York. But, you know, he basically knew some guys who owned those bars. And those bars, as Friedkin mentions, mm-hmm. you know, they were all owned by mob bosses who he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And
interesting.
If you remember the detective in the film, Lafransky, the guy with the mustache,
yeah.
he was actually had gone through a similar experience that Pacino's character had gone through
mm-hmm.
because, okay. you know, he was investigating murders of this sort mm-hmm. Back in New York during the late 1960s.
Okay.
And this film is actually based on those murders that were going on in New York
wow.
in that period of time. So there is this is rooted in reality, and of uh-huh. course some of it's, you know, drawn up for dramatic effect.
Right.
But, you know, that police officer did have some type of psychological effect by having mm-hmm. to work in that environment all the
okay.
time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that you see when you
yeah.
watch Pacino's performance. I mean,
yeah.
you know, when a lot of people think of an Al Pacino performance, they, you know, they think of either the really ham-handed stuff.
Yeah,
that
the really over the top stuff.
Yeah.
Scarface.
And here you got something like a slow boil.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that you see going on in Pacino's
character. Actually, yeah, that's one of the things I really liked is that Friedkin, like, executed the movie really well in the sense that everything was restrained. Like, there's a lot of stuff he could have made really kind of
right.
hammy, but he didn't do that.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, I thought that was really...
And, like, looking as,
nice
like,
touch.
When you bring it up to a slow boil, it's true, because I mean, you're watching him go into the shit right away from the movie, right at the beginning, and it all of a sudden just starts percolating up until the very end.
Yeah.
Right. Which was... The pacing was very well done.
Yeah.
I guess going back to... Individual performances, I say that everyone was pretty good. I thought I liked Pacino's, you know. You kind of, watching all of his better-known films, you're kind of expecting a certain Pacino. And this one, you get a little bit of that, but it's a unique character in its own right, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of reminded me of his performance in the HBO miniseries Angels in America, where he also plays like an older gay dude,
mm-hmm.
I guess. And in that one, he's a little bit more, you know, the traditional, what you would expect from Pacino, but this was also a very, it kind of reminded me of that portrayal, because he's kind of has that, like, you know, Pacino fury come through sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way that he handled the complexity of his character, I thought fit.
And you know, I think that also speaks to Friedkin's strengths as a director. You know, mm-hmm. I think, you know, out of all the brats of the new Hollywood, you
mm-hmm.
know, him, you know, Peter Bogdanovich, Bob Rafelson, you know, Martin Scorsese, and some of these other guys. He's
right.
the one that's really kind of stuck true to his vision, and I think he's probably one of the most underrated directors from that era. And I
right.
think a lot of people, you know, don't really know him because he makes stories,
mm-hmm.
he presents images and talks about subjects that a lot of people don't want to deal with.
Right, right.
And there's some type of danger there, an inherent danger when you watch his films.
Yeah,
you know, you don't want to go to those places, but he
definitely
takes you to
yeah.
those places.
Yeah, and you might feel uncomfortable when you're watching
this
stuff.
He's like testing you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because he never takes it to like a super far where it's like, okay, come on. But he brings it to the edge. And every time you're really kind of stressed out, but it's a really masterful way he does it like that.
Yeah, especially with the use of colors and stuff. He kind of
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's using like a blue filter or if he's just filming in places that are kind of dark and has that like blue kind of glazed out look. But
yeah, I think, you know, in some of those scenes some of the color was enhanced. But, you know, one of the things that I think is always a trait of Friedkin's films is that he is able to capture in a very, you know, these most banal environments, you know, somebody's apartment or just a street or going to a restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just this sense of dread,
yes.
which is within every frame.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in this movie.
Uh-huh.
There's very little light in this movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
In general.
It's a lot of shadow. It reminded me in some parts of Steve McQueen's Shame.
Yeah, and that converges real nicely with, you know, not only the story that's being told, but you know, the psychological state that these characters are in. I mean, if you watch Steve Burns, I mean, it's almost implied that he's having some issues with not only the job, but you know, how he identifies himself as a man. Is he heterosexual? Is he homosexual? I mean, there are those latent tendencies there. And you kind of see that played out with his girlfriend, with Karen Allen, played by Karen Allen. You know, it seems that the communication goes away. You know, he starts having rougher sex with her. I mean, it's something that's really unnerving. And that's another thing I wanted to say is that, you know, if you look at all of Friedkin's films, you know, The French Connection, The Exorcist, Killer Joe. You know, all of the performances that he's he gets out of his actors, they all don't, they don't seem like they're coached or forced or rehearsed.
I mean, not
it just
at all.
Seems like a slice of life. You know,
for sure. I really thought all the performances were awesome. As far as like highlights, you want to run down and do like in general what you liked about the movie and then your favorite scene.
Start off with that, Sam. I'll start off with that. Highlights. I really like the way that I just really like the way it was directed. It was, I know that sounds really general, but just like the way that the dialogue kind of flows and everything is restrained. And at first it seems kind of like when I first started watching the movie, I was going to be like, oh, it's going to be a little gimmicky just because the very first scene seems a little hammy. But then after that, once Pacino gets in there and once you see like Pacino's relationship with his boss, I guess the captain, and his girlfriend, it becomes much more realistic. And it's just, I think he did a very solid job at bringing a very particular subculture that can be turned into like a joke. And he kind of brought it around to something realistic that, you know, is believable, legitimately believable. My favorite scene is probably the one where Al Pacino is dancing in the club because it looks like his body parts are trying to get outside of his body. Like, it just looks hilarious.
Well, Al Pacino's never really been a good dancer anyway.
It's the best dancer. That's right. Yeah. You're going to have to gay it up, Al. It's like, I don't know.
I'm just going to spaz out. And it'll look like good dancing.
Well, that's a really good scene, though, for a couple reasons because I think that's when he's like really.
That's when he gets really deep into it.
That's
like a tipping point.
I would say so. It's a great scene.
So, that's what I liked. What about you? What
Let's go with Mr. A right now.
Well, you know, I think there are two scenes, and maybe they don't contribute to the overall narrative of the story all that much, but the one scene that really sticks out in my mind's eye is when they're doing the interrogation. You know, they get that young guy who's working in the steakhouse, and you got, you know, Al Pacino there. He knows what's going on, but he's got to play act and, you know, go along with everything. And, you know, there's his boss.
And then that dude walks in.
Some other two detectives there. And, and you know, this big black guy in a jock strap and cowboy hat just beats the shit out of both of them. And, you know, the funny thing about that is, you know, again, as I was mentioning earlier, that all this stuff is based in truth. That's a technique that the New York Police Department used to coax information out of, people. And the reason why they did that is because, well, if they had ever went before a judge, you know, no judge would ever believe that because it was so weird. You know, but I think, you know, that shows you not only some of the black humor that's in this movie, but it also shows you
for sure
kind of, you know,
the corruption,
the corruption going on. Especially in the police
like all the entire interrogation scene just seemed like a complete.
Well, it goes with the like, seediness of the whole movie.
That's completely unconstitutional.
Go talk to your crim procedure professor about that.
Exactly.
That did not seem right at all.
That was a great scene.
And I think the other scene, and I never noticed this before, but on a subsequent viewing I did. Very early on in the movie, after the first victim is literally just hacked up, it cuts to a scene in a morgue. And, you know, speaking to reality, that scene was actually shot in a New York City morgue, which they had to get special permits for. But, you know, just something unnerving about, you know, here's Paul Sorvino and this other actor playing the coroner. And they're talking over this guy's body and he's just lying there like that, and you listen to the soundtrack and they're talking about how the guy was murdered and what the stab marks mean and everything else, and you hear in the background there's this buzzsaw in the back.
You could hear it,
and you can hear and you can see in your mind's eye, but well, what the hell's going on the side there? They're chopping somebody up. I mean, and that's just really unnerving. And I think, you know, the aesthetic that Friedkin employs here is, you know, I think we've seen poor imitations of that. I mean, you look at work of David Fincher, you know, kind of like, you know, Seven and Fight Club.
Especially Seven.
Especially Seven.
It's all imbued with that type of nastiness.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I think that there is an energy within the film, a malevolent energy, and I think that just, again, ties into what Friedkin has tried to do with his career, taking us to places where we may not want to go.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I guess for me, by the way, I love that scene with the black guy in the jockstrap, because every time he pops one, they're like, who is that guy?
Yeah.
And every time they, like, who the fuck is that guy? It's progressively funny. Yeah. I just thought that was hilarious.
She's like, dude, what the fuck?
It's hilarious because it's like, it's so weird because you're not comfortable at any point in the movie.
Except right there.
And it's kind of like, you don't know what's going on, but it's like, well, you know, thank God I can laugh a little bit here. But in general, I'd have to say I really like the pacing of the movie. This movie is around 2 hours.
I think it's an hour 41 minutes.
Okay.
Something like that.
Well, that's it. It wastes no time getting to it, the story.
Yeah.
Which I can really appreciate.
Yeah.
And he basically sets up everything through minor characters right in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, you waste no time getting to the first victim. And I thought the pacing was really well done. As a corollary to that, I think, you know, Mr. A has been telling me about this movie for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and you've been looking up the stuff online. You see all like the reviews are really rotten. And it's almost like
people really hated this movie.
Like they had a bone to pick from the beginning, like before they went to go see the movie.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you walk in there with a preconceived notion of what the movie's going to be about, you know, you're going to, of course, vilify that. And I could see if you didn't have, you know, if you didn't know anything about the movie walking in.
Right.
Just watching it, I mean, like I said before, you know, all those scenes that are shot in those leather bars, those are for real. Those are real guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see how that would upset people. I mean, it's just Friedkin takes your face and rubs it in sleaze and rubs it in nastiness.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, they're not going to like that. They're not going to respond to that. And there's really nobody that they can identify with because, you know, Pacino's character is really kind of this cipher.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can you root for anybody? It's not a pleasant viewing experience.
Yeah, no. It's definitely a unique one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something I know I enjoyed.
I think it's a worthwhile. Yeah, it's definitely worthwhile.
As far as favorite scene goes, I'm going to have to say kind of like the final showdown and like the sub and leading up to the showdown. Mm-hmm. It's very don't know how it's going to pan out or how they're going to approach it.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because, you know, it's not your typical, I guess, where this is going to go and happen. So even to the very end when they kind of face off, it's a very interesting way of doing it.
It's really tense.
Yeah, tense. And then before you know it, done.
Yeah.
But
and life is like that. I mean, you never know.
Sure,
I mean, and some of these instances we find ourselves in, you know, that they think you're going to make or break us. They just happen within an instant like that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as low lights, I know this is going to be a problem for Mr. A, but was there something that is probably nitpicky now? Because I think we all kind of like this movie.
Yeah, it's a little, mine would be a little nitpicky for the low light. It would I felt like a couple of the shots went on for too long, or there were just some things that, it's not that they needed to be cut, it's just they could have been hastened. There's just some things like that, or like the amount of times he goes to the bars, you don't really need to go.
Oh, like the going in and out of bars, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. And like some of the shots I thought were, I mean, they're fine, but it's just like, okay,
Some of the early surveillance shots.
Yeah. I mean, just could have been sped up or added for more story. Because I also think more could have been added with the girlfriend because she's an important character, but I don't think she's in it quite enough to give the audience more about Pacino's character, you know, before all this.
Well, but I think, I don't know, maybe that's perhaps by design.
Yeah.
No, I think it is. Yeah, I definitely think it is. Too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I just would have liked to see that a little bit more. But yeah, just a couple of shots were a little long.
Right. Right.
Or whenever he sneaks in to break in and do all that stuff, could have been sped up a little bit.
I don't know. I think the break-in scene.
Not actually when he breaks in, like when he's like looking for him. And like
when he's just like
the shots where he's like looking
doing
back
the surveillance.
And forth
and stuff. You mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you now.
When he's on campus.
In general, the surveillance scenes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could have been a little bit faster for me.
I'll go this one. I'll give Mr. A some time to think about it.
Okay.
I was thinking honestly about the girlfriend scene too. Like, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. But I mean, that's, it kind of mirrors his own like progression as a character, because less and less times where he goes to see her, so less and less scenes with the girlfriend.
Definitely,
right?
And I think in the beginning it probably didn't have like an extended scene with the girlfriend, because
right.
Friedkin already assumes the audience knows what the dude is about. He's like a normal straight guy, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Nitpicky. I don't know what I could do. What could be done better with the film?
Yeah,
because I feel like if you could take some parts out, or this movie could have actually been, there could have been a couple more scenes to like develop things, but I don't know what you could develop.
Yeah, I don't either. I think, you know, when I watched this film the first couple of times, I said, well, that was horrible, because number one, it's never resolved who the murderer is.
Mm-hmm. At the end,
because, I mean, there's just that, I mean, what does that mean? You know, Al Pacino's staring at himself after he's finishing shaving, and then it cuts to that. You know, it cuts to the bar.
So
what does that mean? Is there a connection to some of the murders up in the first part of the movie?
Right.
And then, you know, you see, before he's, you know, shaving and all of that, you see Karen Allen getting dressed up in all of his leather gear. What does that mean?
Yeah. Was there like a secret that we completely missed out on?
Yeah, but I think that also, I mean, you
that
know.
That makes it exciting, though.
It does make it exciting. And, you know, Friedkin was talking about this at Cannes, and, you know, mm-hmm. You know, why was the ending the way it is? And he says, well, number one, you know, there could have been multiple killers.
That's actually what I was thinking toward as it went on to the end, because, you know, the outfit that the bad guy has is like strikingly similar to some of the items of clothing that Al Pacino's character has.
Right. And you notice in the sound design, too, you know, when the murderer or whoever the murderer is talking with the potential victim.
Right.
You know, there's that very low voice that's overdubbed.
It's a very low frequency overdub. So you can't really, it's hard to distinguish whose voice it is.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, my nitpickiness would be probably that, you know, some of the secondary actors, you know, some of their lines perhaps weren't read right. You know, maybe it seems a little stilted.
That's a good point, because the first
that's
scene.
The very first scene just seems a little. It just seems a little robotic.
With the two guys in the morgue.
That one. I could see that.
But, you know, I mean, that could be perhaps a nit, but also I can see why it's done that way, because the style it's supposed to be this very. Again, it's something that aliens.
It's supposed to be almost like a grindhouse, but without, you know.
It's kind of voyeuristic in some.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know if you guys have watched any Pasolini films or not.
I don't think so.
You know, like The Gospel According to Matthew or Salo. I can see how Friedkin's trying to make an American giallo film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or try to riff on Pasolini, you know, and mixed with some of his.
I can see that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I you know what? Let's have Mr. A make his case again, because before we do our before we do our 10-point scale, for all of those people who like saw this, or like, you know, let's say they can't handle the Milk movie, and you know, would you urge them to just like give this one a chance at all?
Well, I don't know. I mean, American movie audiences, as all of us know, I mean, they ain't going to like stuff that encourages them to think or where there's not any real character that you can sink your teeth into or identify with.
Right.
And, you know, this movie uses what Friedkin calls an elliptical narrative. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that you're just going to have to put together.
And you're
going to have to accept the fact that, you know, in life that, there aren't going to be answers to questions.
Mm-hmm. Andy and I have actually talked about things like that when reviewing like The Tree of Life. American audiences don't particularly enjoy or appreciate movies that are abstract in the narrative or abstract in the ideas that are being presented.
Right. So, I mean, it's hard for somebody to make a case for this film if you're not willing to say, look, I'm going to put my hands, or I'm going to put myself in the director's hands and allow him to manipulate me.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you buy in, I mean, I think Friedkin can play you like a violin, you know?
Oh, for sure.
All those places that he's putting you. So it's a hard sell, but if for anybody who's interested in watching Al Pacino evolve as an actor, because this is him in kind of mid-career. This is before Scarface. This is right after The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, Pacino had come off some pretty nasty reviews from Arthur and I think their movie called Grand Prix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd been kind of at a nadir, and he really had wanted to make this film with Friedkin for a while.
Yeah.
And I think it marks that transition where he's starting to kind of get his sea legs again.
Yeah.
Even though the critics didn't think about that the first time. But I would say for anybody who's interested in Pacino, for anybody who's interested in watching the evolution of a director, I think this is a film that would intrigue them. And I also think as just a, for anybody interested in the history of New York and seeing something different, I think that that would be the other point.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say that this is your favorite Pacino performance, or is it like second to The Godfather or something?
I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, you know, Pacino and you know other American actors like De Niro and all these other guys.
Right.
I think they're shadows of their former selves.
Okay. Right.
Well, yeah. Now at least, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think it's hard to put. I don't know. It's a different performance from Pacino. It's him going abstract, whereas, you know, you have a Michael Corleone, you know how he sits on with things.
Yeah.
You have the bombastic character of Tony Montana in Scarface.
Right.
Or, you know, Detective Hanna in Heat.
I love that movie. Yeah. Oh, my
God. So it's, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to place it, but I think out of all the films that he's done, I think it's one of the most unique.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
I believe that.
Definitely, yeah. It's the most that... It's the most testing of his own abilities, I think, as well.
I think it's a brave role, too,
to
play. Yeah. I guess we'll start with Sam again, going 1 to 10.
1 to 10.
And why and what it means to you.
Okay. I would probably give this movie a strong 7.
Okay.
And, yeah, I thought it was very, very good. Again, kind of like with Tree of Life, I would say it's for a very particular audience. So if you're not, like... you know, very interested in Pacino's evolution as an actor or in Friedkin as a director, and Friedkin's evolution as a director, I probably wouldn't recommend this. But if you're, you know, kind of into movies and kind of into the, like the evolution of those respective parties, I would definitely, give this a rental. It's on Netflix now, which is great.
Yeah, thank God. It's good. It's on Netflix.
Because, because I guess it was only re-released by Warner Brothers recently.
Yeah, they did a, Friedkin did a remaster of it in 2007 and actually had it screened at Cannes again with, you know, people like Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, cool.
And his wife, Friedkin's married to Sherry Lansing, who used to be the head of Paramount Studios.
Okay.
And it got rave reviews and you know, it's been shown at college campuses and has had revivals all across the country. And people are saying, hey, this is something that we need to take a look at and reassess.
I would think so, too.
You, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. A, you said that this was one of Tarantino's favorite movies. Is that
right? That's right. I mean, if you watch Grindhouse, which he did a couple years ago, you can see the style being riffed on and some of the soundtrack actually being put into that scene, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
With Kurt Russell driving the car.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
I actually haven't seen Death Proof, so I'm looking forward to hearing that juxtaposed onto Death Proof, right?
Yeah. And actually a lot of the way the scenes were shot in Death Proof and during the first half I could see totally being like a Friedkin kind of like, "Hey man, I like your movies, you know?"
Yeah.
Like an homage, you know?
Yeah. Right. Well, I guess I'll go next and leave it to Mr. A to finish off. But I would give it, I think it's a strong 7.5 leading on an 8.
Yeah.
And I gave Leon the Professional, I think, an 8.5.
Yeah.
For all those who want a comparison of one of their more recent flicks.
Yeah.
I really liked it. And I think I'm going to have to disagree with Sam when he says it's for a particular audience.
Okay.
Because I think that if you can, it's basically it's a thriller, you know, slash kind of like a whodunit or actually, you know, who's doing it, but this like, how are they going to catch him? Right.
Yeah.
When you're watching it, it's just a classic, you know, I like the suspense. I like the thrill watching it.
Yeah.
And, you're just going to have to get used to, like basically uncomfortable subject matter to the masses.
Yeah.
But at the core, it's a very interesting thriller that I think if you're a fan of, you know, basically just watching those types of movies, I think you would like it if you can get past, you know, just the homosexual like culture that you're watching, because it's a very specific, we didn't even talk about it. It's basically bondage.
Yeah.
Right. S&M. It's the S&M culture of
I think one of the characters described it as hard leather.
Is that what they, hard leather?
Yeah,
they're leathermen.
Yeah, the chief of police.
Yeah, I think the chief of police described it as hard leather. So it's a very
leather daddies, like from Arrested Development.
Yeah.
No, but I would give a 7.5 to an 8, and I would say watch it on Netflix, and you can watch it. I think it's fun to watch it with people.
Yeah.
there's some scenes in there that you can all enjoy as a group. Yeah. And I mean, it's not for everyone. I guess I agree with that part. Like some, like I know a couple kids, some of our friends,
who
are guests on this podcast before, who would not watch this for the life of them,
yeah,
or turn it off and walk away, because it's, and it's not really something, I don't really find it uncomfortable to watch, just because, you know, I'm not really bothered by
But I can see people being bothered. I mean, just the.
Because those scenes are intense. They're intense, and they're really
just
seedy.
I mean,
you know, not only the gay, the leather bar scenes, but, you know, that first murder, I mean, that's...
When you're
put in that position, I mean, literally, you're kind of seeing this scene unfold from the victim's point of view, and you realize that's a real human being that's, you know, obviously it's fake, but, you know...
Right. Well, it's a very intense...
It's a very intense scene.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but maybe it speaks to Friedkin's mindset at the time, but there were a lot of subliminal cuts during those murder scenes to hardcore pornography.
Yeah. You have the scenes. like the 25 Cent show.
Yeah. During the Porter show.
Even in the cut in the first scene.
Yeah.
You see that. And it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I guess the third kill, the one where the guy gets stabbed in the park. After, like, right when he gets stabbed, like, the colors wash out.
The flash.
And it goes through this really weird, like, grainy flash. I thought that was really cool.
It's very creative for a 1980s
movie. It's very, like, calls your attention beyond just the murder. It's just, like, a shocking thing. It adds to the suspense.
Yeah. And I would say that, that's the suspense and the thrills. If you really like movies like that, you would like it. 7.5. I'd go and watch it on Netflix when you guys are in the mood to watch something kind of freaky.
Yeah.
On a Saturday night or something like that.
Definitely.
And moving on to Mr. A.
Mr. A.
Make your case, good sir.
Well, obviously, I'm biased. I'm a big Friedkin fan.
Right.
You know, after watching The French Connection and The Exorcist, I purposely sought this out. And I remember the first time watching it, I wanted to take a bath and bleach. it was just that intense, and it was that sleazy, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, watching it on multiple viewings, you know, I just love the aesthetic that's used. You know, the grime is in every frame. These people are people that you could see on the street.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is phenomenal, and I think the story is intriguing, and so I give it a strong 8.5.
Very nice. That's definitely
totally understandable.
Understandable. It's not like you're going for a 10 or something like that, but I really did enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
And glad you guys did. Well,
very solid.
It was awesome. And you know, I am never going to cook with Crisco again.
Very good.
Yeah.
Never again.
Right. But yeah, man, thanks for bringing this movie to our attention.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And good to have you here, and I can't wait to see your next pick.
Yeah, look forward to coming back, guys.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. For sure. Well, thanks everybody for listening. As always, we appreciate your questions, comments, what have you. Tell us what you thought about Cruising after you see it. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.